Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot. Cambridge 105
Radio. And now it's that time of the week when we go
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And what a special bike shed we have for you this evening. There's three of us crammed in, well, four of us really, virtually of course, because of social distancing. Delighted to say, back for a third time is everyone's favourite voice of cycling. He's a legend within the world of cycling, still very much active. He's a renowned journalist. He has covered numerous Tour de France's, and of course it is Phil Liggett, everyone's favourite friend. And can you believe it? His successor, yeah, the pretender to the throne is back, and a much welcome pretender to the throne he is as well. A former Cambridge undergraduate and graduate as such, and have visions of him cycling between his lectures and possibly sprinting up Castle Hill. The only man ever to get to his lecture in time, but perhaps not back in time because he'd presumably diverted himself on the way getting in some training miles. He's also now ITV's main presenter for the Tour de France coverage. He's also a Sky presenter for Darts 180. And he's also a well-known author, and he has his books. He's done many books. In fact, to be honest, if I spent any more time chatting about him, well, we won't get a show tonight. And that, of course, I'm chatting to Mr. Ned Bolting. And we'll also be chatting about the road book. They've got lots of things to chat there. And also joining us again, returning, is a hero, really, and perhaps in some ways more of a hero than anyone on the programme tonight. It's an NHS frontline worker. Yeah, she's very modest about it. Doesn't want people to know, but she actually rushed back from a shift today at Papworth Hospital. And but she's also here in her capacity of the... well, let me tell you, I only found out today, she's actually one of the UK's 100 women in cycling. She was voted in 2019. And she is here because she is a proud promoter of women in cycling and equality, but she's also faster than most of the blokes I've cycled with. It's Becky Hare is here as well. So, without further ado, let's go to our panel. Hi, Phil. Nice to have you back.
It's always nice to be back, Phil. You bring a breath of fresh air. And it's nice to see Becky, and she's awake despite all her hard work all day at the hospital with COVID, which is good to see. And she told us earlier it's her birthday. I think you said tomorrow, Becky, so happy birthday for that.
Yeah, happy birthday, Becky.
And that was the voice of Ned Bolting you just heard. Ned, the successor to the voice of cycling.
I'm confused. How are we going to differentiate between Phil, presenter Phil, and commentator Phil? What are we going to do? How are we going to navigate
I'm a good look. I'm a good-looking one, Ned.
You're a good-looking star.
You could just say the voice of cycling, and we'll all know it's Phil, wouldn't we? The other Phil.
I don't want to upset Ned.
The voice of Cambridge. No. The voice of Cambridgeshire and the voice of cycling. How about that?
Voice of the world. Perfect. The world voice. Ned, thank you so much for joining us, because you're a very busy man, and you always seem to be writing books, and of course you have your very popular tours you do once in a while, and you go on stage and chat to people. What's it like to be the successor to the voice of cycling, to the English cycling fans?
It was something that was suggested to me at some time before it came to pass, and it was something that I fought off for a number of years, because it was, in terms of, you know, I've been in television now for 25 years, which is nothing compared to Phil, but it's still a decent length of time. It was the most frightening proposition, as I'm sure you can imagine, coming after someone of Phil's stature, and having the curse of being not Phil was a very difficult thing to navigate at first. And the reason for that is because, and I pay Phil huge respect here, Phil is kind of everybody's education in cycling in the English-speaking world. You know, I think, Becky, you were saying you've been watching the Tour de France for quite a few years, Phil. You obviously do, Cambridgeshire Phil. And I think we all grew up, and me too, I'm no different. So, you know, we all grew up in our education of the Tour de France listening to Phil. And he defined the race and shaped it and framed it and gave it words and colour. And so I've got nothing for admiration for Phil's commentary. And it was a tough order. It was a tall order, and it wasn't easy at first, but you persevere and you stick things out. And yeah, I think Phil Liggett would probably agree. Phil, you've just got to find your own. You can't be someone you're not. You've got to find your own voice.
I mean, how many times, Ned, have we spoken to top world cyclists who said, for example, Greg LeMond and Lance Armstrong? Lance Armstrong will be the first to remind you, I'm not Greg LeMond, I'm Lance Armstrong. And the same with other cyclists around the world. You want your own image, and you've got to have your own show. And I think, by the way, mate, you've done a great job of it. I make no bones about the fact I miss working for ITV. It was a matter of circumstance that we didn't gel at the time we had to change over. But I'll never forget the lovely email you sent me, Ned, because I think I replied saying you brought a tear to my eye. Until that moment, I hadn't cried, but I did then, because I suddenly realised I was no longer going to work on ITV.
Well, Phil, I mean, I thank you very much for saying that. And there are some... It's funny having this conversation with you. I don't think we've ever really spoken about it before.
No, we haven't. And but, we've chosen Phil's show to reveal all. Gosh!
Local Phil.
Local Phil.
But, that, you know, having said, Phil, that I did figure out eventually that I had to be myself and I couldn't imitate anyone and I'd have to find my own way of doing it. There are things that I, from studying your commentary and listening back to it, that I have taken on board. And they're quite technical things, actually, that you do probably without even noticing it because, in a way, you quite possibly invented them, for all I know. That you certainly made it yours, which I really have learned from. And one of them, and listen to this next time you listen to a bit of Phil Liggett commentary, is... One of the skills that you've got to develop as a cycling commentator is the various phases of a race, you know, because the races are very long and you can't maintain a pitch of great excitement from start to finish. That would be insane. It also wouldn't reflect how bike races unfold. But there will come a point in the final 500 metres, whether it's a mountain stage or a sprint or something in between the two, where you're full gas. You know, you have to impart the excitement of that moment and give it what it's worth. And Phil just does this thing that, I don't even know if you're aware of this, Phil. You, instead of your voice going up in register until you reach a sort of ridiculous pitch that is unsustainable, you actually, like, you drop down the gears to go again, like a car going, and you get on the top of that one, and down you go again. And that... I'm not sure I've come across that before in a commentator, but I think it's one of your great hallmarks, and it's something I've been trying to kind of work on myself actually. So I've got lots to learn from you.
Well, I'm gonna butt in. Sorry, Phil. I'm gonna cut. Yeah. I can't believe I'm cutting across the voice of cycling. Shame on me. I'm gonna say here though, Ned. I actually think the partnership you're building with David Miller, I think it's fantastic. I think it's a different one, but it's a really already, you know, you've got a really nice traction going there, and you do this thing a little bit like Paul did with Phil. You have this technical thing. If it's a technical comment, if you say something David doesn't agree, he's not rude. He just says something different and carries on. And it works really well. So I think the world of cycling has benefited. But while we've got the two of you here, because it's not what we're really here to chat about, I think it's really nice, your conversation you've just had, and we'll hear from Becky just in a second about this. There was a lot of guff, wasn't there, when when you took over from Phil, and there was a lot of, as there always is on the edges of these ridiculous social media and forums about, you know, it was all, you didn't get on and that sort of stuff. It's all just people who probably never met either of you before. But the reality is, isn't it, cycling is such a small sport even now, isn't it? But presumably you have to get on with other journalists.
Well, in all honesty, yes, I was happy to see people were missing me. I wasn't happy to see some of the comments against Ned and David, because they weren't trying to compare to me. They were doing a job which they got. And, you know, when I first started in television, I got my job in television because the previous commentator was killed in a car accident. And so I got a break quite by accident, and I made the most of it subconsciously at the time, but I became, I suppose, quite good at it, so I kept all my jobs. And then Ned, and I think I said at the time when I wrote to you, Ned, you've got your chance, grab it with both hands, because you only get one shot. And I think that's general for life as well. And even you, Phil, with your behind the bike shed, boy, this show's coming on a bomb now.
Yeah, well, I mean, after tonight's episode, sky's the limit, really. Here, it's just going to
happen. Or they might pull us.
That or the viewers.
Yeah,
we
might pull us yet, you know. Try not to talk across each other. We're trying to be professional here. I know we're using Zoom because of social distancing. Becky, before we are going to talk about the road book, which we will explain why the Bible of cycling in a moment. Becky, you are a cycling fan, as I mentioned. What's it like being with Phil and Ned on the same conversation?
It's really exciting. When you emailed to say, would you like to come on the show? I was thinking, oh my God, these guys are absolute legends. Absolutely brilliant. So yes, thank you very much, Phil, for setting it up and for you guys to be here as well. Yeah, it's so funny, like just like Ned said before, you know, growing up listening to the Tour de France, like, you know, you wouldn't just be watching it on telly, like my dad would have it on the radio, everything would be on, like you'd hear. So just seeing you guys on here is so fantastic, because actually I'm so used to just hearing the voice over, like, on the telly. So yes, highly exciting. Can't contain
I have to say to you, Becky, that I'm feeling the foreigner in this setup, because Phil's in Cambridge, of course, you're working in Papworth and living in Cambridge, and Ned went to Cambridge University. I didn't know you had to be so well qualified to take my job, Ned, but there you are. And I live in Hertfordshire. I feel a complete outsider on this show.
Yeah, but you do come shopping here. You told me that. You do come shopping here because Trish brings you shopping. Okay. Now, I just lost. This isn't very good, is it, at all? Becky, before we go to Ned and Phil and chat about the road book, you are frontline NHS. Is it as gruesome as we've been told currently?
How honest do you want me to be?
You be as honest as you wish.
Yeah, it is. It's bad. Like Papworth, the numbers in Papworth are worse now than they ever were in the first wave. Let's put it that way. And they were hitting that kind of back end of last week. But we are vaccinating, so there is a real push for that. And that is something that's really, really positive, and I think gives us all a bit of hope. I don't think it'll be a very quick sort of, you know, coming out of lockdown. I think we've probably got 5-6 months ahead of us, really, until proper normality. I'm sure most people who work in healthcare would probably agree. But yeah, I think trying to keep, like, for me, the main thing for all of this is trying to keep some kind of routine. Like, if you go to work still and you're not in the office, or if you are in an office of some description, you know, I'm still trying to cycle to work to keep something of normality there. So that's my one thing that I keep saying to people, is trying to keep some routine. If you are a cyclist, get out and ride regularly at the same day, same time, kind of thing. And hopefully that'll kind of maintain us for the next couple of months until we're sort of starting to get better weather as well.
Becky, hats off to you. I'm super impressed. My wife is also a nurse, not quite on the front line, but, you know, brings back stories of how hard all you guys are working. And you know, please accept on behalf of everyone listening to this our deep gratitude, and, you know, keep it up, and more power to you. I'd love to hear about your own cycling stories, but, you know, just before I come to that, I do remember this time last year when we were all becoming aware of what was going on in Wuhan. I don't know if you remember this, but I remember a video emerging of one of the doctors who was on the front line in the hospital in China when the cases were coming, like you're dealing with now, like a wave, who rode to and from work into the city of Wuhan. And of course, Wuhan had an extreme lockdown, didn't it, where the city was just absolutely silent and blacked out, and posted these videos every night of their ride, and they would sing to themselves as they rode through this deserted city and video it. And it was one of the most deeply affecting things, really. But it made me think, isn't that a wonderful thing about the bike? That it, and the way that you use it, one of the ways you use it is just getting to work and back, that it affords you this space, you know, to just kind of detoxify your thoughts and just get into another world. And not many other things do that, do they, apart from obviously the odd glass of wine.
And I'm just going to interrupt here, because if anyone wants to know why Ned has taken Phil's job, or is, like, you know, just rewind the last minute of his programme and you'll understand why. Yeah, completely agree. The bicycle is amazing. The way the bicycle has, it's come of its own, hasn't it, during lockdown. We've covered this quite a few times now on the programme, and we've got a couple of weeks' time. We've got a very interesting lady going to come on. She only agreed today, so I'll tell you more details about that next week. But it's amazing how the bicycle has really come to its own in this moment of crisis, isn't it? In the same way, the bicycle came to the rescue a lot of people in poverty, didn't it, in its time. It's helped to lift people up, and it's now doing the same thing. So, Becky, are you finding time to go out to do any sporting cycling, or is that just off your agenda now?
Yeah, no, it is. So I suppose I didn't say actually. So I'm a respiratory physio, and that's kind of like why I suppose I'm sort of frontline really. I'm working across the vaccinating clinic and a bit on critical care, but mostly repositioning patients and stuff. So cycling wise, yeah, I'm not riding outside at the minute, apart from commuting to work, and that's kind of been a bit of a personal choice, because no matter how good a rider you are, I still worry that if you get knocked off, there's just no beds, there is just no critical care beds at the moment. But that is a very personal decision, and I think it's more just because I work there that I've kind of decided that, because I still know loads of friends who are doctors and stuff who just, you know, want to get outside. I still do quite a lot of running as well, so that to me is my kind of, I can get outside and enjoy the sun that way. And Ned, totally agree with what you're saying about cycling. You know, don't get me wrong, like, especially the first time around, going through the first wave of COVID, God, I'd ride home and I'd cry on the bike on the way home. But actually, by the time you get home, you've kind of had that moment and you processed it, and then you kind of get home and then you're able to kind of deal with things a little bit of a better way. So yeah, the bike gives us so much time to just kind of reflect and give our thoughts some sort of organization, I suppose, at the end of the day. So yeah, that's why I've not stopped it. I've tried really hard, even in rubbish weather, to keep getting on it.
And I can tell you from personal recent experience, it's a really good way to deal with bereavement as well. It just gives you that thinking time. And on that cheerful note, Ned, the road book, it's been published, and isn't it beautiful? Would you like to explain to our listeners, as the editor of the road book, what the road book is?
Well, the simplest way is to explain it is, if you follow sport in this country, you might have heard of a book that's about 150 years old called Wisden, which is the cricketer's almanac, and it covers an entire season of cricket as it's played across the world. And the road book has been a kind of idea that people have talked about in cycling for a long time, but it does the same job as Wisden does for cricket. So it collates the information, you know, documents forever for posterity what went on, both in the men's and the women's pelotons, the races all across, you know, the five continents of the world, from season to season, through month after month. It devotes extreme detail to the bigger the race, the more detail it gets, etc. But it's all in there. And to support that, there are really inventive bits of writing. I write a long editor's introduction, which basically sums up the entire year of racing endeavour. We have a jury that awards, of which Phil is one of our jurors, a very prestigious jury, including Christian Prudhomme, who's the director of the Tour de France, and Mark Cavendish has joined us on the jury. Phil's a member. They choose their riders of the year in various different categories. We have kind of a 10 or 12 long form essays that delve into certain personalities, either men or women, or certain races or certain moments in the year. And so there's bags in it. This is the third year. 2020 was the third year in which we produced it. We're a cottage industry, really, a small team of people doing it ourselves. And the first edition in 2018 was very nearly 1,000 pages long. It's huge. It weighs 2 kilograms. It's beautiful. It's beautifully produced. And last year, of course, with so many races being cancelled, we were worried about how big it was going to be. But actually, I'm holding them up. You can't see this at home, but you can on the Zoom call. That was the 2019 book there, and that was last year, 2020. So you can see that it's a fairly hefty book nonetheless, but you can see the effect that COVID had on the racing. That's all you ever need to do in 50 years' time to remember what this was all about. So you just need to go, that's what it was about.
And I think it's lovely, because cycling culture has this beautiful thing. One of the things I love about cycling is this link between art and literature and cycling. And there aren't many sports really which demand such a link between the two, or even lend themselves, because there's a remote romantic side to cycling as well, isn't there?
So you're completely right. It's unlike any other sport. You know, I'm researching a book at the moment that I want to be able to write in a couple of years that involves me spending a lot of time researching the lives of riders in the interwar years and after the First World War. And I mean, the wealth, the treasure trove of extraordinary stories from a historical context about what these riders got involved in during the First World War and their bravery, and not always, sometimes their cowardice as well. You know, just incredible. But also, I pay great respect to the cycling public, because I think this, and Phil, I'd be interested to know if you agree here. The cycling audience to which Phil and I broadcast have different degrees of knowledge about the sport, for sure. But the one thing that they all have is this incredible curiosity, this desire to know more. And it's not just about the power data that Marcel Kittel is putting out in a sprint. It's actually much, much more than that. They want to know about the landscapes through which they pass, if we're thinking about the Tour de France. They want to know the history of that chateau that they've just gone past. They genuinely do. You know, they want to know about historical, cultural, artistic trends. And it's all part of the package, because cycling is so much more than other sports which are contained within a stadium and restricted to the dimensions of a playing pitch. You know, road racing is so much grander than that. Your stadium is an entire continent, you know, with everything that contains. So, and I think that draws in a certain type of viewer and fan. And the road book revels in all of that.
I'm just going to jump away from the road book for one second, because you mentioned the chateaus you chat about with David Miller. And am I right in thinking, because the first time the two of you teamed up to do the Tour de France, you didn't take that too seriously, did you? Without being rude.
I'd like to bring Phil in here, because we need to mention that Phil Liggett isn't just Phil Liggett. Phil Liggett was part of one of the great double acts in broadcasting, and the man that I knew a little, counted as a friend for 1 month in the year, but Phil's closest friend in broadcasting and in life, Paul Sherwin, passed away. When was it, Phil? When did Paul die?
December the 2nd, 2018. It's rather like, you know, where you were when JF Kennedy died. It's terrible. Yeah.
But one of the things that you and Paul did so well together was this. You had a way of negotiating this very difficult thing to do in broadcasting, where all of a sudden we get a long helicopter shot of a 16th century chateau in the Loire, and you don't. Let's be honest, Phil. Neither you nor Paul had the faintest idea. Be honest.
No, okay, I will be honest. Yeah,
How did it work?
What you said about Paul is absolutely right. We started it as a joke, because, you know, we're always being a little bit flippant at times, and people, I think, watched it because they knew we were being flippant. But the Tour de France didn't really know how to sell itself. Yes, it got the best bike riders in the world. No, it didn't reach the right corners of the world until they got a PR agency involved in the mid-80s. Then they started to sell France. Then they started to take shots of chateau and nice areas of France and show us this beautiful country on television. We had a huge viewing audience. At the height of our coverage, we were getting 150 million viewers a day when we did all of the English-speaking networks in the world. And so as they were showing us this chateau and the camera wouldn't go off it, I just happened to say to Paul one day, "Now, that's a nice-looking place, Paul. It looks as though it's in need of a bit of loving care. It's got no roof on it. Who lives there?" And he goes, "Well, Phil, that was Louis XIV back in the 17th century." And I looked at him. I couldn't speak because we were live. I mouthed the words, "What?" And he just got stuck in. And from that, we had a joke after that we always used to tell at functions we attended. If he didn't know who lived in the chateau in the bygone days, I used to slip him a note and just tell him it's Louis XIV. They'll never know any better. and that's exactly what we did. But then, of course, what we did do was inspire the Tour de France to actually employ a woman to drive the whole race route in the month of October and log every monument and chateau and saleable item that the race would go past and make a book on it. And that book was given, when you could persuade the organisers to give it to you, of all of these written down, every stage. And every good picture in the book on the particular day of the race, there'd be a television camera. And that means the helicopter would put it on the screen. So we were able to follow in the book. And now we could be very eloquent in what we know now. Paul would say, yes, well, there's four corners to the castle, Phil. One was burnt down in the 17th century. It was rebuilt, and it's owned by Fred so-and-so now. He still lives there. And we got all the information now. And Paul got so into it, he developed this same situation with every race we did. And before we knew it, he was telling me what was happening on the Tour of California and who lived in San Diego as we went past the front door and things like that. But I suppose we tended to popularize the race. But it worked. And people loved us for it. And the mails, people used to write to us for a full detailed route of the Tour de France. Not to watch the race, but to go on holiday afterwards. And I can see Becky wants to say something there.
We used to go to France on holiday when I was about 9 to about 16. And it was always the Loire Valley. And we used to get dragged around most of those chateaus if they were open. And I'm so sure that that's how my dad found out about all of them.
I must say, Ned, before you say something, I wanted to just say something. Don't tell David Miller this, he'd kill me. But I wasn't watching the programme, but when you were doing the English, you had this big vulture fly across the screen and the camera would not get off it. Obviously, I was not near you, although we're both on the race in France. And Paul and I identified the bird, etc. But when I got back home, Trish, my wife, said, I heard David Miller. He said, that's a big bird. And that's all he said. That's a big bird. Well, yes, a vulture is pretty big. It was a griffin vulture because the vultures of the Pyrenees and the Alps.
I remember that.
Very special.
And I must point out to listeners, because the thing about Phil is an ornithologist and it's been all his life, so he knows everything about birds. That's why it's like, for anyone who's not quite sure.
I remember that moment so clearly. It was on last year's Tour de France. A beautiful, amazing, what they can do with the helicopter shots these days. Incredibly steady shot of this vast bird and this kind of Pyrenean background. And and there was a moment of, you'll know this, Phil, you glance at your co-commentator and you're both silent and you think, who dares? And I was thinking, am I going to have a guess? Am I going to just try and guess and bluff this one?
Now,
or do you know?
I am going to try and push my way in between these two fine gentlemen for you, because coming up in a moment, because Phil, we haven't told you this, but Phil Liggett's going to have to clear off in about 15 minutes, unfortunately, because he's going to go cycling. We'll tell you why in a minute. But before that, Ned has kindly volunteered to play Spin That Wheel, and that'll be coming up very shortly here on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot. Cambridge 105
Radio. So, Phil, a former Cambridge educated person. I too was educated in Cambridge, but I was allowed to leave at 16. Just pointing it out there for you. You went to Jesus College, didn't you?
I went to Jesus College, Cambridge, yeah.
Yeah, you did. And were you there when the now Duke of Wessex was there?
Who's he?
Prince Edward, or was he before you?
No. He'd come and gone before me.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because only because I spent many days chasing him. He was on his bicycle between lectures and rugby matches, and I used to follow him on my bicycle because I was working for an agency to photograph him. And I learned a lot of words which I didn't realise the royal family used at that time. But to be fair, he's a very pleasant guy. He was anyway.
I'll tell you who we had at the college when I was there. We had one of the sons of Deng Xiaoping, who was the leader of China at the time.
Oh.
And I was there, and I think in my first term, Tiananmen Square happened.
Oh, well.
And that was kind of on the orders of his dad. And I remember an awkward conversation in the college bar about, you know, what do your parents do?
Yeah.
And I just caused problems in Tiananmen Square.
And he said, well, my dad, killed students.
Oh, no. On more cheerful things, when you were in Cambridge at Jesus College, whereabouts did you used to leave your bicycle? Did you leave it in the chimney, as they call it, down to the Porter's Lodge?
You're absolutely right there. All the students leave their bikes there. No, I did, and that was the problem. So the bike I took to Cambridge University was my mum's old, I think it was a rally, but it was a step-through ladies' bike with a basket on the front. And that was my bike that I took to Cambridge. And I used to have to ride from Jesus College down to, is it called the Sedgwick site or whatever, down by there? That's where the university faculty buildings are, which, by the way, at the time seemed like, I mean, the most epic journey, you know, like I've got to ride all the way there. And I went back to Cambridge. I went back to Cambridge about 2 years ago for some reason. I can't remember.
Tour de France, maybe?
I realised with a fair wind, you could probably pick up a stone and actually throw it from Jesus College to the Sedgwick side. It was that close. But it felt enormous at the time. And anyway, my mum's bike got nicked after about 3 or 4 weeks.
I was the guy from Balliol College, that was, I remember.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's Oxford, Phil.
Yeah, is that, no, we don't talk about Oxford. There's a reason why there's almost 40 roundabouts between Cambridge and Oxford, because if it takes, you have 40 chances to turn around and come back to the good place. And to be honest, if you give up 40 times, we don't want you back. Now, Ned, you very kindly agreed to step up to play Spin That Wheel as our... I got lots of nice buttons here I'm going to press because I like pressing buttons. It's a little hobby of mine. I do that. So, first of all, you're going to be today's
guest on a bicycle.
And as your guest on a bicycle, stay with me. You just gave me a funny look then. As our guest on a bicycle,
it's time to play Spin That Wheel.
So, Ned Bolting, are you ready? Would you like to play Spin That Wheel? This is, Phil's done this. Phil Liggett's done it, the man himself, and he was very good at it. The great thing about this this quiz, Ned, is you will know the answers before any of us, because it's all about your own cycling habits. So you're a winner before we've started.
Oh, what? Okay.
Yeah, sounds quite all good, right. Doesn't it? Okay.
Yeah, right.
Let's play Spin That Wheel. Spin That Wheel.
So here we go, Ned Bolting. What's your earliest memory of cycling?
My earliest memory of cycling is when my dad took me over to the park opposite our house and let go of my saddle for the first time and I could ride unsupported. I think I was about 4 or 5.
That's a beautiful memory, isn't it, to do cycling? What type of cycling do you enjoy most?
Increasingly slow cycling. I think my favourite type of cycling, when I came back from the Tour de France, the following Monday after the race, I would like nothing more than to cook a meal, and I'd go to my mate who's a butcher and he lives about 500 metres away, and I'd ride my bike up there, buy chicken to take back and slam it in the oven. And that was always my favourite bike ride of the year.
How often do you cycle now?
Daily.
What sort of bicycle or bicycles do you currently pedal? And if you've got more than one, which one's your favourite?
My favourite is an absolute Frankenstein monster of a bike. I can't even tell you what it is because it's just when bits have fallen off it, I've managed to blag secondhand parts that I've stapled back on somehow. All the paintwork is chipped. It's absolutely filthy. And it does have drop handlebars, so I suppose you could call it a road bike, but I never use the drop handlebars. It's unlike any other bike in London and no one will ever steal it because it's hideous.
You say that. They take anything now. What would be the perfect dream cycle ride for you, Ned? Whereabouts in the world would it be and with whom?
Oh, do you know what? Anywhere right now. Anywhere rather than the streets. I mean, just get me out on a bike. I tell you what, I remember I wouldn't mind doing this again. Shortly after the European referendum in 2016, then we left, like literally days later, we left to go to France. And I'm not making a big Brexit point here, but you might be able to read between the lines. I took the Plymouth to Roscoff ferry, and then I rode over a couple of days. I rode from Roscoff to where did the race start that year? It was St Malo, wasn't it? No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was near Cherbourg Peninsula, Utah Beach, and all that. Mont Saint Michel, and I rode there, and I needed, like we were talking about with Becky earlier, I needed to process a lot of stuff, and the weather was beautiful. I had a howling tailwind. I'm more fond of those 2 days than I have been of many days over the last 4 years.
Ned, do you prefer cycling solo or in the company of other cyclists?
That's a really good question. it kind of depends who they are and what we're doing. I'm not a big fan of like going quite hard and chatting. That's not good.
Spin that wheel.
Oh, we have to stop you there. I'm so sorry, but I am going to ask you one question.
All right.
You have won, by the way. I loved it when you actually said to me, had you got the question right?
Right.
About the early memory. The whole point is that you know the answers and we don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right, okay. Never mind. Right. Yeah, right. Never mind. It's quite probably a lot to get your head around, isn't it, in lockdown? Right. The question which we didn't get to, but I think a lot of people would love to know, I'm sure you've written this before, who is your cycling hero and why?
I'm not sure I have been asked that, but I must have been asked it. I've probably said different things in the past, but the first image of a rider that popped into my head as soon as you said that was Marianne Vos.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, the greatest, I think, with... possibly, you could argue a case for Beryl Burton, but I don't remember Beryl Burton, whereas I do remember Marianne Vos and know her and respect her deeply as a human being, but also the greatest female rider of all time.
So thank you so much, Ned, for playing Spin That Wheel. You won, amazingly. Aha! You got every question right, as if I'd know. I'm just going to say hello to Trish, because Trish Liggett is there, took part in our Christmas Eve programme. We had great fun. Hello, Trish. Anyway, so you need to Google her. She's a former Olympian ice skater. It's that sort of program, you know, happening here. Now, Phil, I know you're going to disappear quite soon, aren't you? Would you like to tell everyone where you're going and why?
Well, I'm popping over to South Australia, and I've got to be there in 25 minutes. And I'm doing a bicycle ride. The Tour Down Under is Australia's greatest bike race, but of course, with COVID, nobody's allowed in Australia unless you live there. So everybody riding the race this year is locally and basically nearly all from South Australia. But they've also run a virtual challenge, and stage one was yesterday, and that someone had a brilliant idea, I can't say I agree with it, and that was to ride the first stage route, which is on the computer, obviously, it's virtual. And it's a brand new app, and it's absolutely fantastic. And everybody can enroll from anywhere. And yesterday there were two guys on, one from Sussex and one from Essex, and a few from San Diego and California. And there we are, covering the whole world. And I'm interviewing a top professional cyclist who was actually in Melbourne in Australia, a guy that Ned knows very well, Simon Gerrans, and four times winner of the proper Tour Down Under. And so what we had to start, I hosted the start, we count down, and off we all go. And very soon, the image of P. Liggett was slipping to the back of the peloton and still talking. And by the time I got off, 45 minutes later, which is 15 minutes before they got to the finishing line, I was nearly 4 kilometres, that's about 2.5 miles, behind Simon Gerrans, who was in his room in Melbourne talking, and he wasn't even out of breath. So tonight, I'm doing the second day. And we were going to do the great Swiss cyclist, double Olympic gold medalist and 4 times world time trial champion, Fabian Cancellara, who also wore the yellow jersey in the Tour de France. And Fabian has just pulled out. Guess what? He got the time zones wrong, and he didn't realize the time of day it was in Switzerland. So he's pulled out. But I am delighted to say I've got two female professional riders from, they'll be in California, from the rally cycling team. And I'm looking forward to interviewing those, because everybody's spread all over the world and they don't know where to go to do their training just now. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm going to jump on the bike in just on 20 minutes. I've got the course is already downloaded on the iPad, and then I just punch go and everybody appears and they can hear me. And it's absolutely fabulous. And it's not going to go away when COVID ends. This will happen as a separate entity in the world of cycling. And I think many other sports too.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm sat here in my cycling gear in shorts. I'm beginning to shiver now because it is winter.
I was going to say that, but you've also got a log fire going, you were telling me earlier as well.
Yes, but it's in the other room, Phil, not here in this room. But in fact, you feel warm when you start doing the app, because this is a real-time shot video. It's not a sort of dodgy cyclist going in shifts and starts. And the sun is out, and it's 38 to 40 degrees. You actually feel warm, even though you're not celebrating it in the Barossa Valley, or as we are today, in the Adelaide Hills.
So if you're listening to this and like Phil Liggett, you're about to take part in the virtual tour down under, then you can catch the rest of this programme. It's going to be on the Cambridge 105 catch-up site. That's Cambridge 105 Radio. And also, apparently, you can now get Bike Shed on Spotify. So you'll be able to sort of just, I say, for behind the bike shed to your smart speaker. And hopefully you shall be able to listen to Ned and Phil and Becky chatting to each other there. So, so Phil, I'm going to say goodbye to you now. Because, you know, you need to go and do a warm-up, and I should think is that's either your wife or matron standing behind you wanting to help you get on your bicycle.
Well, she's got to give me a massage because she is a physio.
She takes
after you, Becky, yeah. And
really the best.
I'm looking forward to it. Now, the thing is, the older we get, of course, the longer you need to warm up. So 20 minutes is not going to be good or bad to me, I'll tell you.
So thank you so
much. As long as I can ask the questions.
Thank you so much, Phil Liggett. Appreciate it always. You're a good sport, and we appreciate your support of Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Thank you.
Very good luck, Becky, with the trials and traumas of the
hospital. Thank you.
Very best of luck. And Ned, I don't think we've met since we were on stage together. I used to call you, didn't I?
Yeah, you took me about 10 years to get my name right.
I know. Well, I'm learning now. But I was saying it's over a year since we were together on stage in Harrogate at the World Cycling Challenge. I can't believe where time has gone. All the very best. Love
Cheers,
to
mate.
See you.
See you, Liggs.
Thank you, Phil. I'm off.
Take care. Before we carry on chatting to Ned Bolting about the road book, 2020. We'll just have a quick word with Becky, because one reason I invited Becky on, because Becky is an ambassador, I guess, aren't you, for Climbing Higher Together? And if you could just tell us, just give us a few headlines about Climbing Higher Together, why you've got Ned Bolting here, you see.
So I'm a big women cycling advocate, obviously. I do a lot of riding with I do ladies' women's ride around Cambridgeshire on behalf of the bike brand Specialized. And this has kind of led to me ending up getting a race license last year. And I really got into hill climbing. Doing hill climbing has really highlighted how few women are racing. Obviously, it was the same in crit racing, but it is so much fewer, even in time trialing and hill climbing. So this year, there's a huge push to try and get more women into hill climb racing. And there was a huge push from Reading CC to, they got something like, it was normally about 10 or 12% of women enter the National Hill Climb Championships, and Reading CC were hosting this year, and they got it, or last year rather, in October, they got it up to 30%. So off the back of that, we wanted a social media campaign to kind of encapsulate that, but also a chance for women to share their stories and something to kind of hang it all off. Alongside the sort of routing that we're doing with cycling time trials, with an open letter to try and get sort of equality in prizes, because we feel that that is part of the issue, and really to try and get more women interested in racing and try and kind of break down the barriers and stuff around it. So that's a very short summary. But yeah, it kind of came from the Hill Climb Champs that we were all at last year. We called it Climb Higher Together. We had a feature, we've had a couple of features in Cycling Weekly and Rouleur, and actually it's really continuing to kind of build and build, and we're really just trying to keep the ball rolling, to get women to share their stories, what barriers they've come up against in cycling and in racing, and actually really try and keep our voices being heard, because it's social media is great, because actually it's kind of continuing to grow rather than just us do a lot of shouting about it. And then it kind of disappeared after a while. So we're trying to kind of keep building it. So, yeah.
Oh, good on you, Becky. It must be very frustrating when you look at the numbers and the statistics sometimes about the inequality or the lack of equality in terms of sort of participation. And you've also put your finger on a really big sort of, and it actually applies, I think, to the men's cycling scene as well in the UK, that there's lots of people riding their bikes, or there's more anyway, but fewer people willing to race. Much as we admire and continue to produce great champions, whether that's Hannah Barnes or her partner, Theo Gegenhardt, we can't just assume that this production line will go on forever in terms of the elite sport as well. So the fact that you've got a racing license and are actually taking that on board is great. I think it's brilliant. Although I have to say, hill climbs are totally nauseating.
I don't know what's got me into that. I've done a bit of triathlon, a bit of running, and it's always fairly middle distance. But yeah, suddenly I'm bashing out these 3-minute efforts up these ridiculous hills. But and then I was at 9th last year, so now everybody's like, oh great, so you're going to continue to do that, and you think, oh god, I've got another year of nauseating reps. It's awful.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear more about Becky and the Climbing High together, there is a podcast on the Cambridge 105 website, one of the previous programs, just before Christmas, wasn't it, Becky? You were here?
Yeah, I think start of December.
Yeah, so you can find it there. Ned, we've got some time left, and we obviously knew we were going to have lots of things to talk about. Before we chat more though about the road book, I just want to say thank you to you, because a cycling buddy from my teens has just been in contact, and he put the two and two together, because you tweeted earlier that you were going to be on this programme, and he's got in contact with me after 40 years. So there you go. And he almost went to Peugeot in France in his cycling career, but it didn't quite work out for him. So, Ed, if you're listening, you're obviously listening, Ed, so we will catch up with you soon, I'm sure. Now, the road book, now what you didn't mention, well, you did mention you had lots of different people had contributed to it, but this edition, you've got some real star names, haven't you?
We encourage some of the great winners of each year to write their unique kind of take on their defining race for us. So in year one, Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome both won Grand Tours. Chris Froome won the Giro, which may well prove to be his last ever Grand Tour win. And he did it in the most exceptional fashion. And he wrote this extraordinary piece for us. The following year, Philippe Gilbert was one of the riders who wrote for us, as well as Annemiek van Vleuten, who won the World Championship in Great Britain, the World Championship. And this year, I'm always terrible at remembering, but Theo Gegenhardt wrote an account of winning the Giro d'Italia, and Anna van der Breggen wrote an account of winning the World Championship, and, Wout van Aert, who is the most exciting road racer of the year, probably. He also wrote for us as well. So it's really lovely to build this community of top riders who are also entering into the spirit of the road book, and I think it's becoming a touchstone for them as well. It's really nice. We get one of the big cycling agents based in Germany, who have riders like Mads Pedersen and Theo Gegenhardt, actually, on their books. They contacted us and said, you know, can we do a deal and you send us like a 50 of your books, because we want to give them to each of our riders as a memento of the year.
So if you're listening, pro riders are getting this book. It's such a good book. The interesting thing about it was, I was lucky enough to see a few extracts from it, but what's interesting about this book, Ned, is the quality of writing. Were you surprised that sports people, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way, were you surprised that they could be so elegant with words? And have you had to edit lots of stuff?
Well, it's all their words, so you're not changing anything, you know. Yes, there's a degree of stripping out the fat sometimes, but you know, what you see on the page is what came out of their mouths. And another really good example of that in this year's book is, I don't know if you remember, there's the only black South African rider in the World Tour Peloton is Nick Dlamini, right? This time last year, went viral on the internet because he'd been for a training ride in Cape Town. This is pre-COVID, pre-everything, you know. It's amazing to think back how the world was. And he was pulled off his bike by a park ranger who, in front of a rolling camera, broke his arm. Literally pushed it. He said he can't ride here, pushed him up against the side of a truck and snapped his humerus in two. And you can actually, on the video, don't look at it, but on the video you can hear the bone crack.
Oh.
And Nick then went into recovery and and all this sort of thing. And his for a while, his cycling career was under threat. But Nick is, Nick is one of the very, very few black riders in a very white sport. So it struck me that, this year of all years, this is the voice that needs amplifying. Mm. And Nick has written just the most mind-blowing account of growing up in almost indescribable poverty in one of the hardest up townships in the Cape Flats.
Isn't that the contrast that with Chris Froome, who grew up, didn't he, in South Africa? Kenya, wasn't it? He spent a lot of his time.
Both.
But he used to cycle through the townships, didn't he, at all hours of the day, and he never got stopped once, did he? Anything happened to him, far as I know.
That's so true. Although, you know, I don't think you should... Yes, Chris Froome came in part from a very privileged family, and certainly a white Southern African family, both in Kenya and in South Africa. But I don't think you should downplay quite how extraordinary...
Oh, no, I completely with you. I mean, if you want to know his story, read his biographies, because he became a cyclist and he became a champion. The physical side was just part of a journey for him, wasn't it? He had so many barriers he had to jump over, didn't he, to get there? Fascinating character.
Extraordinary character. And you never really... I think he's underappreciated because people don't really get quite where he's come from. He's come from the moon.
You mentioned cyclists from the African continent. It does make you wonder, doesn't it? Because we haven't really started to tap there, have we, at all? Do you think there will be a time when there... Is cycling growing as a sport in Africa? In countries?
Not really. It's got pockets of... it's got small pockets. So it's a massively popular sport in Eritrea and a little bit in Ethiopia and a tiny bit in South Africa and a little bit in the North African countries of Morocco and Algeria and Egypt. And I should mention Rwanda. Rwanda has one of the greatest races in the calendar, the Tour de Rwanda, which is documented in the roadbook every year. And if you go online and look on YouTube, put in the Tour de Rwanda and look at it. It is mind-blowing. It's such a well-run race and it's so popular in that country. And it's, but you're right, in terms of like really competing at the top level, we've been saying it for a long time and it's not happening.
And is it because cycling is a relatively expensive sport to get into at grassroots level if you're in Africa? And of course, the roads aren't going to be as good, are they? But not the countries I've been to anyway.
Well, the roads, I don't know. I don't know if it's as simple as the roads. Certainly, there's a degree about the kit, you know, the expense of the kit and all that sort of thing that's really significant. But actually, I think over and above that, there needs to be a culture of organised races, clubs that work, for it to thrive. So if you contrast, for example, the UK with Belgium, right? The Belgium is the heartland of world cycling. In Belgium, every little village once a week has a race. Every little village has a race once a week, all year round, right? And so that we replicated thousands of times over in Belgium. Why British people go to Belgium. Now, how did we become so good at it at the top level is because we built a couple of velodromes and invested heavily in track cycling and then took those principles onto the road. But in continental Africa, they have neither a tradition of locally organised road races, nor do they have the resources to build velodromes, or let alone fund the programmes to go into velodromes. So their starting point isn't there. Yeah. The only way that African riders can thrive, and occasionally, like Nick Dlamini, outliers do, you know, prove their worth at the World Tour level, is by coming to Europe. And getting, if you like, adopted by European economics and then having to battle with a racist peloton in part as well. So there's a lot going on there, but it's we're a long way from seeing the wave of success that Africa could so easily tap into, you know, if they were only given the economic chance to do that.
Do you know, I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking we're so fast running out of time here. But I could listen to you for hours and hours, Ned. I can see why you've got the job, why you are pretender to the throne, for sure. Becky, did you want to say something very quickly? Because I'm going to ask Ned in a moment just to let people know how they can get hold of the roadbook.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think I totally agree with everything you said that. And it's so interesting, isn't it, that running is exactly the same. You know, you get all these big success stories, but, you know, a lot of them are refugees or they are moved over to Europe through training camps and things. It's so mirrored.
There's a big conversation to be had there, isn't there? Ned, we're starting to wrap the programme up because the finishing line is fast approaching, as it always does on Behind the Bike Shed. Ned, how can people get hold of your book? And you've got a great website as well, I have to say.
Thank you very much. Very simple. If you go to Google and put the roadbook in, our website is the first hit that you'll get, and that's the way to buy it.
And I have to say, it's a brilliant birthday present. If someone wants to buy you a special present, anniversary, something like that, you tell them, I'd love the roadbook, please, because if you can't get on your bike, we won't be able to watch a lot of cycling. Yeah. It's a good alternative. Very quickly, Ned, we've literally got about a minute and a half. I guess junior cycling on the world scale has suffered, hasn't it, because of the lockdown?
Yeah, that's, you know, those road races that did go on to fruition, they were, you know, they were doing it through the in the teeth of a pandemic, and one of the easiest thing to do, sadly, for a lot of the organisers was to cancel the junior races. So a lot of the under 23 and junior races fell away. But listen, let's end on a positive. My sincere hope is that these are the darkest days of this pandemic right now, and that however long it takes, Becky, we're gonna see a different picture in a few months, and we're gonna enjoy those things that we used to enjoy. Most, you know, one of which was racing and watching others race, and it's a big part of my life and a big part, I hope, of a growing community of people.
Ned Bolting, thank you so much for being our guest on A Bike Today. It's been a real privilege having you on. I know you're a very busy person. You just have to look at your Twitter feed to know how much you're doing and what you're involved in. Hopefully you'll come back again at some point. We have something to share. And thanks to our guest Phil Liggett, who no doubt is perspiring very much as he's being chased and watching himself slip down the back of his group on the virtual tour down under. Special thanks, of course, to Becky Hare, who lovely to have you back here, Becky. And take our wishes and love to everyone working there on the front line at the NHS. So thank you all. And if you're out and about, remember to keep it local, keep it safe, and have great fun. And until next time, safe cycling. You've been listening to Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot.
Cambridge 105 Radio.